The House Committee on Education for Monday, May 23, is called to order. Welcome, everyone, and welcome students that just came in. Interns, so welcome. We're glad to have you here. Today, we're going to start with a public hearing on Senate Bill 6. We'll open a public hearing. Mr. Keller, would you please give us the pertinent information?
Yes, ma'am. Senate Bill 6 prohibits school administrators, teachers, employees, and volunteers from promoting, suggesting, or supplying performance-enhancing supplements to students. Provides exceptions for administrators, teachers, employees, and volunteers treating their own children and for certain non-school-related activities. Punishes violation by maximum imprisonment of 3 months, $500 fine, or both. Declares an emergency, effective on passage, and it has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Senator Courtney, would you like to come forward and grace us with your presence? Indeed, we are very appreciative.
Thank you, Chair Flores and members of the House Education Committee. My name is Peter Courtney. I live at 2925 Island View Drive, north of Salem, 97303. I'm a state senator, and my state senate district is District 11, which includes portions of Salem and all of Jervis, as well as Woodburn. I come here today to speak in support of Senate Bill 6. It passed the Senate on a 23-2 vote on March 29th. I sponsored this measure at the request of the Oregon Student Activities Association, referred to often as, in everyday language, as the OSAA. That is the official organization of the great state of Oregon that oversees all the activities involving our schools, public schools, private schools, K through 12 in Oregon, not just the athletic events, which often people think, but as well as dance and band competitions. Senate Bill 6, this concept is simple. No adult connected with our public schools, whether as a teacher, a coach, administrator, or volunteer, should be pressuring student athletes to take performance-enhancing supplements. Now, I've been around sports most of my life, and I think that the healthy competition is a very valuable part of being a student and growing up. And I worry, though, that about the pressure that we sometimes place on student athletes. Competition can become unhealthy when winning becomes an obsession. Not all the messages that we send as society are good, and parents and coaches can be overzealous. Kids are bombarded with television images that are glamorized, not just athletics, but bulked up athletics. So let me cut to the quick. I'm not going to read to you what I hope is before you, which is testimony. It simply says that we do not want the coaches and the teachers, administrators, and volunteers in our school systems to be promoting these kinds of supplements in terms of the athletes that are under their care or under their auspices. The issue is one of growing concern in our society, not only in Oregon but across the nation, because we are developing an attitude, in my humble opinion, that you can enhance your athletic activity in a given competition as well as the physical appearance by taking these kinds of supplements. And we do not want those who have a tremendous influence over our young men and women promoting them. And so, in a nutshell, that's what this bill does. And with that, Chair Flores, I will take your questions, comments, or criticisms. Because you can read my testimony, you don't need me to read it verbatim, and I don't like to read testimony.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Senator Courtney? Representative March.
Thanks. Thank you, President Courtney, for bringing this important piece of legislation to us. And I, as I'm reading this, it sounds like you're excluding stimulants like caffeine, like a Jolt Cola or something of that nature. And maybe the other gentleman is prepared to take those kind of technical questions.
Could I ask Chris Garrett, my chief legal advisor, high and learned legal advisor, who assists me on daily activities, get into that, because I think the answer is yes, but I want him to officially answer your question, Chair Flores, Representative March, if I may be allowed to do that, Chair Flores.
Certainly.
Mr. Chris Garrett, please.
Chair Flores and members of the committee, for the record, Chris Garrett from Senator Courtney's office. The answer is yes, it does. It is meant to exclude those kinds of foods and drinks that might be considered ordinary foods. The bill is written to prohibit the promotion of dietary supplements, and that is a technical term under federal law. It's defined to include, among other things, foods that are not represented as ordinary foods for consumption and also are labeled as dietary supplements. A Jolt Cola or a cup of coffee or Gatorade would not be labeled as a dietary supplement.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Go ahead. Madam Chair.
Representative.
In the bill, one party is not supposed to use a performance-enhancing compound. Pardon me. And then as line 25 says, school employees, school volunteers may endorse or suggest that a student who is an employee's or a volunteer's own child inject, inhale, or otherwise ingest a dietary supplement that contains a performance-enhancing compound. What's the differences? Could you read what I'm talking about?
What lines were you referring to?
Line through 25 to 28.
Chair Flores and Representative Lim, the purpose of that section of the bill is simply to say that we're not trying to regulate what people can do with their own family members. If this is a parent or coach who is encouraging his or her own child for whatever reason to take these substances, that wouldn't fall within the purview of this legislation.
Follow up. Even in the school compound?
I believe so, yes.
There seems to be some problem. While all the children are doing it, we are asking many other children don't do it. So this looks like contradicting each other.
Well, Chair Flores, Representative Lim, you know, it's an interesting question, and I invite you to decide what you want to do about it. But we're talking about someone's daughter or son. And if a parent wants to do that, then I wasn't willing to do this in this piece of legislation, and therefore we didn't get into that. Now, if you're asking on my philosophy and you're not, and I'm not sure I want to get into it real deeply with you because I want the bill to pass, that's another issue. But we knew what we were speaking to here. It did come from a specific fact, a case in the state of Oregon, and we chose not to make the language, Chair Flores, respectfully, and Representative Lynn, that broad.
I'm not, Mr. President, I'm not convinced yet.
That's fine. Yeah, you.
Representative Lim, if I might point out to you that on page 2, in the sequence of the discussion, a school employer or school volunteer may endorse or suggest for a student who is their own child,
yes,
provide dietary for their own child or sell or market, providing that the activity does not, line 5, major A, does not occur on school property, is not a school-related function, is entirely separate from any aspect of the employee's employment or the volunteer school activities. So while I would concur with you that there may be concern about what parents, school employees may be doing on their private time, it does really restrict it from occurring on the school premises. And I think perhaps the message would be carried that it should be discouraged overall.
Okay. Can I ask one more question?
You may,
Madam Chair.
Please.
That the front page, line 13, it says, is intended to increase athletic or intellectual performances. How that perform that they increase their intellectual performances. Maybe can you expound a little bit how this drug or whatever, this performance enhancing compound, how does it increase intellectual performances?
Well, Chair Flores, Representative Lim, I'm not a doctor. I just know that some of these dietary supplements are promoted not just to increase your athletic performance, but your physical appearance as well as your mental capacities. And so it could make you more focused, more intense in the mind, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm not a doctor, nor can I comment on that. I know that there's language in here that does not just refer to athletic performance. It also, I feel, speaks to physical proportions, because we know that that is often the reason young people get involved in this. They want to look bulked up. They want to look, well, I won't get into all the words that I've heard them use, but that is very much an appeal as well. And in the mental processes, you know, much of athletic activity involves not just physical, but it involves the mindset when you get into an event. And how focused you are and how intense you are, that often helps you, shall we say, perform better too. So that issue, I'm not prepared to answer in detail. I just know that those words were picked as a result of how dietary supplements are sold and promoted in our society today.
We will be having testimony from the MD as well, so we'll perhaps he will be able to cover those questions for you.
And I want to say something to you, because I noticed that the head of the OSAA, Tom Walter, is here. I do not take this lightly. Although he asked me to introduce it for him, I spent from Friday afternoon from 2 o'clock to 7 o'clock. And then I came back on Saturday from 11 o'clock. I actually got there before 11 o'clock all the way to 4:40 in the afternoon at the state 1A, 2A track meet at Western Oregon University, where they allowed me to be the chief flagger. That all running events were started on my white flag. You better not start them on my red flag. And the whole day, all day Friday, I was spent out there with those incredible young boys and girls from all over the state of Oregon, from those great 1A, 2A high schools. This is the biggest day in their life, the biggest day in their family's life. Some of these Eastern Oregon, Central Oregon old schools, it's an endearing experience. But literally, I was there and witnessed and started every one of the running events, literally starting on Friday afternoon as well as all day Saturday, for the first to the last. And so this is not just something I'm doing on behalf of the OSAA. Those young people, because I had a very bad day Friday around this building on Friday, and I'll tell you, those young people brought me back on Friday day and on Saturday. And so I feel very strongly about this kind of legislation, not only in terms of athletics, but also as a message, sadly, that I think the Oregon legislature now needs to send in a bipartisan, bicameral way to all those who choose to be involved in our young people's lives in their many competitions. So I think the OSAA needs help, but I think that we need to remember that our young people are being deluged now by this kind of thing. They and their parents are being convinced that this can make them a great winner, or very physically attractive, or whatever you want to call it. But we do know, and this is when the doctors will come in, there is some real dangers involved in some of this stuff. It's only going to get worse. So I didn't mean to preach, because I've got all these written statements in front of me, but I want you to know this isn't something I'm just doing because I was asked to by the OSAA. I experienced it firsthand in a wonderful way with young people all day Friday and all day Saturday at the state 1A, 2A track meet, which happened to be conducted at Western Oregon University.
Thank you very much. Mr. Garrett, did you have anything else that you wanted to add?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much. Dr. Stanford and Mr. Welter.
Good afternoon, Chair Flores and members of the committee. My name is Tom Welter. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon School Activities Association. I reside at 2322 Southwest Huber Court in Portland, zip code 97219. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this afternoon. I come as a representative of 288 high schools all across the state of Oregon, both public and private, that make up the Oregon School Activities Association. We're a private nonprofit organization that is legislated by legislative mandate, and we are approved every 5 years by the State Board of Education to conduct high school activities in the state of Oregon. We provide leadership and coordination of many different interscholastic activities over the course of each school year. We conduct 80 state championships each year in 16 different activities, ranging from football, basketball, baseball, and track, as President Courtney spoke to, but also state championships in speech, music, dance and drill, and cheerleading. Our 288 member schools have approximately 165,000 students in them. Each year we survey our schools to find out how many students are participating in each activity, and it shows that 120,000 of those 165,000 students participate in one of the activities sponsored by the OSA over the course of a given school year. We feel that the activities that we sponsor enhance the educational mission of our schools. They enhance lifelong learning values such as teamwork, self-discipline, sportsmanship, dealing with success, dealing with failure, dealing with other people. Over the last 20 years, we've seen a significant decline in the number of coaches who are also licensed teachers in our buildings. 20 years ago, virtually every coach of our high school student athletes was also a licensed educator. Our studies this year show that of those 7,500 coaches in our high school, over 50% of them are not licensed educators. They come in from outside the school to help coach during the after-school hours. We do require, through our association, that every one of our high school coaches become certified through an American Sport Education Program. It's basically a 6 to 8 hour seminar where we teach them the true values of high school activities and that the purpose of high school activities is educational in nature. It's kids first and winning second. However, in a 6 to 8 hour seminar, we don't come close to replacing what those licensed educators learned during 4 and 5 years of college as we had 20 years ago. One of the concerns that we have, because we have so many off-staff coaches, is that we truly care about the health and well-being of our student athletes. We were before this committee 2 sessions ago seeking permission to have a statewide pre-participation physical exam that is now required of every high school student before they can participate. And it was through our medical aspects and sports committee that we were able to initiate that legislation. The OSA combines with the Oregon Medical Association to form what we call our Medical Aspects of Sports Committee. This committee meets with the OSA 3 to 4 times a year, and we run by them significant issues of concern and areas of concern regarding the health and well-being of our athletes. The concern that we're expressing to you today is exactly one of those. Certainly, every student wants to be as competitive as they possibly can be. Coaches have a significant influence over student athletes. If a student thinks they can take a performance-enhancing substance and gain an advantage, they'll try to do that. Certainly, if the coach either directs them to do it, suggests they do it, or provides it for them, they will do that to gain a competitive advantage. Our high school coaches are not doctors. Many of the substances that we're talking about are so new to the market that no one knows what the long-term negative side effects of continued use of these substances might be. And that's the concern that we have. Again, we're concerned about their long-term health and well-being, not about how fast they run 100 meters, you know, on Friday afternoon at a state track meet. With me today is Dr. Thad Stanford. Dr. Stanford is the chair of our Medical Aspects of Sports Committee, and also the OSA belongs to a national organization made up of state associations like ours in all 50 states plus the District of Columbia. Dr. Stanford sat on the National Federation's Sports Medicine Advisory Committee for 6 years, including the last 3 years he was the chair of the National Sports Advisory Committee. So with that, I will turn it over to Dr. Stanford. Also, before you, we have handouts, a 2-page handout from the OSAA with my signature, and then a more comprehensive handout that Dr. Stanford will refer to in his remarks. Thank you very much. I would entertain any questions at this time.
Thank you. I think that we will wait until Dr. Stanford has given us his testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Flores and members of the committee. My name is Thad Stanford. I'm an orthopedic surgeon here in Salem. My address is 3360 Crow Eisen Creek Road South, Salem 97302. as Tom said, I chair the medical aspect of sports committee, and I will say that we've had a committee here in Oregon for over 30 years, and there are still some states that don't have an advisory committee for their state activities associations. I want to also briefly to echo Senator Courtney. It was my privilege to serve the medical team at the 3A-4A meeting in Eugene last Friday and Saturday, and to see what these young people do and what they try to do and how they put their effort into it is a very emotional experience for me. And they're wonderful people, and they deserve the best. I'm going to briefly go through what I have put together. Here, in 1994, Congress passed the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act. This defines dietary supplements, leaving loopholes that have made the public vulnerable to misleading claims. According to DSHEA, a dietary supplement may contain vitamins, minerals, herbs or other botanicals, amino acids, other dietary substances meant to increase the total dietary intake, comma, a concentrate, metabolite, or constituent or extract. Now, that included ephedra. That included androsterone. Both of those have been, the FDA, because of problems, did step in. But this bill allows the dietary supplement industry essentially to regulate itself. The FDA does not have regulatory function over these supplements because of this bill. Most consumers aren't aware that the supplements and the advertisements for them are not regulated by the FDA as prescription drugs are. Therefore, the National Federation in 1998 created a position statement against the use of supplements, and that's your handout one. It was reiterated in 2002 and 2003, and those handouts are there. The National Federation, as Tom said, is a federation of the 51 state high school athletic activities associations, and it represents 18,000 high schools and over 7 million student athletes. Their concern is well-founded and real. Handouts 4 and 5 talk about what is beginning to come out of some studies being done. They are called complementary and alternative medicine studies. And particularly handout 4 shows what has been determined about several of these things that, again, they're over-the-counter, advertised as essentially being harmless, but they have some problems. They have some problems by themselves. They have some problems with the way they interact with other medicines and other supplements. And indeed, if you were going to have a surgery in the next few weeks, you would be asked to stop all supplements 2 weeks before because of the unknowns of the response and the reaction with these supplements with anesthetics. Handout 6 is another study, and I didn't include the whole thing. It's several pages, but it shows that now we're beginning to get some legitimate studies about supplements, and I needed to point out that there's a disclaimer here that there's no pharmaceutical institution or company involved with the funding. Increasingly, even in some very reputable journals, the funding will be coming from pharmaceutical companies, and indeed the FDA even has some people working there who are consulting with those companies, and there are people who are concerned about the integrity of some of these articles. Handouts 7 and 8 are so-called designer supplements. These things are all over the place. Certainly the youngsters, their parents, and the coaches even will not be aware of the danger of some of these things, and that's one of the reasons for this bill. There have been reports of 10-year-olds using steroids, handout number 9, and this is unusual, but there are a lot of kids still using steroids. I say a lot, maybe 5%. That's a lot. We even learned the other day that many musicians are using steroids because of the increased demand for rapidity and volume playing the fiddle. Athletic coaches, as everyone has said, have a great deal of influence over the kids and their parents. And there have been a lot of reports of what we're trying to stop. So our concerns are that the supplements may not be what they are reported to be. The FDA has no right to check them. They may not do what they are purported to do. They may be dangerous, as I've mentioned. They certainly can often be expensive, and kids don't have a lot of money. And they're almost always not necessary. And using them sends a message, at least in my opinion, that you can tell a youngster to take a pill if things aren't going well. And that can segue into the use of other substances. So that's, if there are any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for either Mr. Welter or Dr. Stanford? Representative March.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to kind of quantify this in a scope that I understand, because I'm looking through here on your inset number, or number four, you've got things like echinacea and golden seal, which a lot of parents give to their children for a cold or a sore throat. And so parents, even if they're a teacher, can still do that. That's okay. But in acting in their capacity as a school person or a coach, they cannot tell a student that they should do that.
That's correct.
Okay.
The message, of course, to the parents is that even some of the least appearing to be least harmful things can have a problem with them.
Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Robland?
Yeah, I'll just ask one. In some ways, I see this as also being helpful to schools to keep you out of a lawsuit when something shows up later to be found to have a problem. And if someone in the school had been supporting it, that would put them liable as well. And we are in a litigious kind of situation. Number two question, I guess it's just a comment to the good doctor here, and that is, you know, the work that OSA has done and the medical community in trying to keep kids safe is really a wonderful thing. I've watched the wrestling situations happen over the years, and again, it's through outstanding stuff that they've proactively done with regard to keeping that sport even alive, because there was a time when people felt, because of some of the transferable diseases, that you wouldn't be able to handle it. But you guys came in with procedures and stuff, and I commend you for the efforts you've done over the years to do that. But then I'll get back to the other question about the liability. Do you agree with that?
I agree with it. And also, it is interesting that a lot of schools, if a child's going to take an aspirin, he has to take it into the principal or some administrator. But the minute that child gets out on the field, it seems to change. Perhaps, and now some districts have tightened that up.
Representative Tom,
for you, does the association have a prohibiting rule now that is similar to the legislation you're asking for?
Representative Flores, Representative Dahlem, the position statement that you see from the Federation is also, similar language is also in our OSA handbook.
And just to follow up, if a coach or someone giving supplements to a non-member of the family, what's the punishment now? What happens to them?
Well, again, right now, the USA is an association of schools, and so personnel issues, by and large, are left up to our member schools to take care of. You know, we don't get into hiring of coaches, firing of coaches, you know, when a coach should be reprimanded. That, you know, there are legal issues and contractual issues, and as an association of 288 schools and, you know, virtually 200 different school districts, any types of reprimands of that nature are left up to the individual school at this point rather than from the purview of the association.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Further questions?
I might have one.
Representative Lynn.
And thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm not sure what to ask, but
just shoot it out there.
Just shoot it out. And could you redefine to me what actually means performance enhancing compound? Even though it's language in here, could you explain to me again so I can understand better?
I think it's a broad term. There are the obvious performance-enhancing compounds, stimulants, steroids, creatine, those kinds of things. I think the problem here is that a lot of these supplements are advertised or at least promoted as being at least quotes, performance enhancing. Whether they are or not, probably we will learn more as these studies I've mentioned are done. But basically we're talking about those ones that are being used by young people and that I've already mentioned.
Okay, so another follow-up. So as long as, let me give you an example, it's a steroid. As long as the parents are doing it in their own home in private way, that's okay. According to this.
No, steroids are illegal.
Pardon?
Steroids are illegal anyway.
Illegal, but in here it's that the line 26, school employee or school volunteer may endorse and suggest that the student who is the employee's or volunteer's own child inject, inhale, or otherwise ingest a dietary supplement that contained performance-enhancing compound, which means that, which of course means include steroid. Am I make myself?
Well, I don't think a parent can suggest steroids because it's illegal federally. I mean, it's a prescribed substance.
Pardon me, Madam Chair. If the steroid is part of the performance-enhancing compound, apparently it's allowable. Employees, own child, volunteers, own child, whatever.
You folks know more about that than I do, but it wouldn't seem that this bill could supersede a federal bill that says you can't use steroids.
Chair Flores, Representative Lim, I think we need to make the distinction that, you know, steroids are illegal. Steroids are performance-enhancing substances. However, not all performance-enhancing substances are steroids. Creatine might be a perfect example. You could probably go into any fitness center in the city of Salem. You can go into a general nutrition center, and you can buy creatine over the counter. You don't need it. You know, anybody can buy it. However, my own personal experience, 5 years ago when I walked into the weight rooms at Oregon and Oregon State University, you saw creatine everywhere. Today, you won't find it anywhere. You know, because I think the medical community has voiced significant concerns about the negative side effects of long-term continued use of that substance. Now, does it enhance your performance? You know, many people would argue that it does. You know, but again, we're talking about high school kids. We're talking about teenagers. We're not worried about how fast they run the 100 meters next Saturday. We're worried about what kind of physical life they have ahead of them, you know, 10 and 15 and 20 years from now.
I would like to add that there was a high school in Arizona where 10 of the young people went across the border and got steroids. They were arrested. The professional athletes that take it, there seems to be a lot of argument about whether they'll be able to play or not, but I don't know of any of them that have been arrested, which is kind of a different double standard, if you will. But high school kids need to know that not only are they harming themselves, but that they're breaking the law in that case in steroids.
So, Madam Chair,
Representative,
I got a clear answer to the questions I presented. That the line 26 and 27 and 28 clearly says that the school employee or school volunteers may, and then inject, inhale, otherwise ingest a dietary supplement that contains a performance-enhancing compound. And you explained to me the steroid that is one of the enhancing compounds.
It is a performance-enhancing compound, yes.
Then simply the bill says that if the child is a volunteer and the employee's child, then it's okay to take this.
I think I already commented on that. It's illegal federally to and I don't think we can change that with this bill.
Representative Roblin.
I just want for clarification purposes. John, it's like, if I have an injury to my leg and a doctor believes that they need to give me an injection of cortisone to fix that, that doctor can put cortisone in my leg. I can't go across and get bike cortisone and put it in my own leg. because that's a prescription drug. The same is true with most, with the other drug we're talking about. There are appropriate uses, apparently, for things like steroids. And there are different kinds of steroids, but they're all prescription drugs. And this law doesn't change the federal law with respect to prescription drugs. But it says, if it is legal to buy it, if it is legal to buy it, then a parent can offer it to their child if they want. But even if it's legal to buy it, like creatine and like some of these other enhancement drugs, you can't, as a public employee, promote that at school. I can do it with my kids. So I can't break the law with respect to other things like prescription drugs. But I can, if it's legal, give it to my own child.
But the bill doesn't say that.
I think, John, what we're saying here is that there is a relationship between a doctor and his patient. There is a relationship between a parent and their child. And this does not tamper with those. There's also a relationship between a coach generally, but public employee, as Representative Roblin has said, and the student. And that relationship ought not to get into the realm of the parent, nor should it get into the realm of the physician. And it certainly shouldn't ask or promote young people at this age. If you ask 100 football players what they're going to do, 50 of them will tell you they're going to play pro football. And they honestly believe that if they take, in my recollection, was some green ones, some blue ones, some red ones, and then a handful of yellow ones, that they're well on their way. This is good legislation. It will protect our children.
Thank you.
Mr. Welter, in your handout on the second page regarding the National Federation of State High School Associations, you talk about the empirical data that shows widespread reuse among high school age kids. Is there anything, and I take it that's from a national perspective, is there anything to indicate that we have such a widespread problem here in Oregon?
We don't have any survey data to support that or not support that one way or the other. However, I think, you know, in my 10 years working in the office of the OSAA, as I attend regional and national meetings with representatives from other states, the issues that we face, they face, and the issues that they face, we face, you know, it might vary in degree, but we're all facing some of the same issues. So I don't think that we could sit here and say that our kids are immune from that. You know, probably quite the opposite. We probably have roughly the same percent as what we see nationally.
And my point in asking the question was not to try to derail that there is a problem. I think there is a significant problem, and I'm encouraged that we're on the track to try to address that. And as Senator Courtney was indicating, just the influence and the media attention and focus, I think, is unfortunately a persuasive tool. So I'm just wondering if there was any kind of data that we would have to show what kind of problem we're dealing with in Oregon.
No, there isn't.
And that may be good news, maybe bad news.
You know, Chair Flores, I think, you know, currently three other states have passed similar type legislation. To my knowledge, Michigan, Illinois, and Texas have passed similar type legislation to try to protect the student athletes in their states.
I would add that California, in their last session, passed one specifically with steroids, but their governor vetoed it. I don't know if he's still using them or not, but now they've just passed another law, and I do not know if it has to do with steroids, but it may have to do with more substances, but they just passed another one, and I don't know its fate.
Interesting comment. Thank you very much. Thank you. Yes.
And Chair Flores, just one more statement, and it's totally not dealing with this particular topic, but over the weekend I wanted to acknowledge Representative Roblin. His former high school, Marshfield High School, won our 4A girls state track championships, and also North Bend High School was very successful in our tennis championships over the weekend, so congratulations.
And North Bend girls, second AAA.
Yeah. That's correct.
I saw him.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think we will close the public hearing then on Senate Bill 6. We will get a little bit more information and bring it back in a couple days. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 85. Mr. Keller?
Senate Bill 85 allows recipient of advanced technology education and training grant or loan to use money for any specified for any of specified purposes. It does not have a subsequent referral.
Mr. Keller, I'm sorry. Madam Chair. My name, for the record, my name is Joanne Truesdell. I'm Assistant Commissioner for Community College and Workforce Development. Cam Price Browley, our Commissioner, was here. She was called out for a moment. She may be back. Senate Bill 85 is a technical amendment. In last session, it began as Senate Bill 272. What occurred in the process of our language was that we had a very simple or that was listed as an and. And so suddenly our private and public partnerships were unable to compete for grants. So in an effort to make sure we fix it, this is what we're bringing before you.
I just must tell you, I really appreciate it because it has taken me literally months to figure out what you were trying to accomplish here. And Mr. Keller finally brought me up to speed after his inquiry that it was a technical fix.
Yes.
A tiny little conjunction there. Any further questions or any questions?
Where's the and coming out?
We're looking for it. Well, that's
32 on page 2, probably.
Right at yes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
And there was some language added at lines 28 and 29, it appears, on page 2.
Yes, when we, Madam Chair, when we went through to fix the and, it made sense to clean some of the other language up to make it consistent in grammar and specificity. Any of the following, and therefore it allowed for any of the following, and that it also a public-private rather than partnerships, really should just say partnership.
Okay. Questions?
As a former English teacher, when I went to correct tense, I always corrected everything else.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 85 and open a work session on Senate Bill 85.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 85 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Dahlin has moved Senate Bill 85 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, those of the opinion that Senate Bill 85 should be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will please call the roll.
Representative Barr?
Aye.
Representative Lim?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Dahlin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Marsh?
Aye.
Chair Floyd?
Aye. Having received the required majority, the bill is declared passed. Is there objection to putting this on the consent calendar? These little technical fixes can go on the consent calendar. Good. So ordered. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 85. We will open a work session on Senate Bill 169. Keller.
Senate Bill 169 eliminates the requirement that mathematics and English statewide assessments be administered on or after March 1st of the school year. This does not have a subsequent referral.
Thank you very much. Chris Minich, please.
Chair Flores, members of the committee, I appreciate you taking some time today. I'm Chris Minich. I'm with the Department of Education. I work for Doug Costi, who is the director of the Office of Assessment and Information Services, and he has testified in front of this committee before. The purpose of this bill is to eliminate a requirement that the assessment be given after March 1st during the school year. The real reason why we've been pushed by school districts on this one, because some of this, high schools in the state offer semesters, and the best time to test their students may be at the end of the first semester, which would be around January, end of January, and that this requirement is contradictory to that. The simple piece for those schools is that they don't want to wait 2 months after the kids are out of class to have to administer the state assessments to those students. Our assessment advisory committee was asked to weigh in on this, and they felt that it would be asked if this piece was removed so that we could have them set the windows and work with schools to do so. Our goal is just to give the assessments when the students are available to take those assessments, not necessarily after March 1st. That's my brief testimony on this issue. We'll take any questions.
Representative Dahlin.
Would this, like the past bill, almost be considered a technical cleanup? You have no stake in when the test is given. It's a matter of providing a better opportunity, a technical fix.
Chair Flores, Representative Dahlin, that's correct. It's a technical fix, and it's mainly for the high schools in the state because most of the elementary and middle schools would still continue to test after March 1st.
Any further questions? Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, does this really only affect the problem solving and the writing, or does it include the multiple choice in all the areas, including science? All of them?
Yeah. Chair Flores, Representative Roblin, the current law only refers to the math problem solving assessment and the writing assessment, so it's only this piece would only affect those two.
Further questions? Have a handle on it? All understood? Perfectly clear? Okay.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, then we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 169. We will open a work session on Senate Bill 169.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 169 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Dahlin has moved Senate Bill 169 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, those of the opinion, Senate Bill 169 should move to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We'll vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will please call the roll.
Aye.
Representative Lynn.
Aye.
Representative
Goodwin. Aye.
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 Aye. Excuse me. Having received the required majority, the bill is declared passed. Now, it would seem that this would be a good candidate for the consent calendar. Do you think that it's going to... Okay, we'll just expedite. We'll put that on the consent calendar as well. Close the work session on Senate Bill 169. Becoming very efficient here, aren't we?
You are. Yes, it's just so impressed.
We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1039. Mr. Keller?
Senate Bill 1039 allows a person who holds a degree from a post-secondary institution that is not accredited or approved by the Office of Degree Authorization to claim or represent that they have an academic degree if a disclaimer is included. It declares an emergency, effective on passage, and it does not have a subsequent referral.
Thank you. Alan Contreras, please. And colleague.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Alan Contreras, Administrator of the Office of Degree Authorization. With me is Kevin Neely from the Department of Justice, who will do some of the explanation of the bill. Last year, a Wyoming entity called Kennedy Western University filed suit against the state and made some constitutional arguments. The state settled that case. One of the requirements of that settlement is that we bring to you this legislation, which would make an adjustment in how the state treats degrees issued by unaccredited institutions. I'll let Kevin go over the legal aspects of it, and then if you have any questions about, you know, how it works functionally, I'd be glad to talk about that. And I also wanted to mention that I believe you will have some amendments coming to this bill that will deal with a different constitutional problem related to the regulation of religious colleges in the state. Madam Chair, I'm pleased to report that after 5 months of grinding away on this issue, all of the interested parties have agreed on everything except one sentence. And I have some confidence that we can figure out that one sentence in the next day and maybe get this done. I very much appreciate your patience on that issue.
We're looking forward to the agreement on
yes.
that one sentence. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll wait to hear about that. Mr. Neely.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as Dr. Concura said, my name is Kevin Neely, and I'm with the Oregon Department of Justice representing Attorney General Hardy Myers. As Dr. Contreras and as Mr. Keller described, this bill is a relatively straightforward resolution to a litigation that was filed with the state last year. It arises from essentially the construction of ORS 348609, which was challenged in federal court. The challenge essentially asserted that the law was unconstitutional based on the First Amendment. The department agreed, again, working in coordination with Dr. Contreras, that we wanted to resolve this matter in as expeditious a manner as possible, hopefully not only save the commission some money, but save the state the time from going into court and litigating this. The change in the law is relatively straightforward. You can see it's mostly codified in lines 18 to 25. Those lines are essentially the codification of the agreement that was made, and they permit a organization that does not have accreditation to use the name of the institution as long as there's a disclaimer. We feel that this essentially, one, fulfills the mandate of the agreement, and two, rests on a basic premise of consumer protection that you can say whatever you want as long as you're honest about it. That's all I have to say. If you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to help.
Thank you. Representative Lim and then Representative March.
Yes, and the disclaimer you're talking about, do they write the name of the institution and saying if this institution is not accredited? Or how do you say that?
Madam Chair, Representative Lim, that is essentially correct. Any person who uses a degree from an unaccredited entity that has not been approved by our office would be required to include the term unaccredited or unapproved by ODA on, for example, on their letterhead next to the degree. Any place that they claim in writing to have such a degree would be required to have the disclaimer with it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Representative
French. Thank you. Mr. Neely, are there any provisions in current law for the providers of these degrees to state that they are not accredited at the state?
If Chair Flores, Representative March, I think that's probably a better question for Dr. Contreras, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Chair Flores and Representative March, the way Oregon law works, any provider that wants to issue degrees inside the state of Oregon, in or from Oregon, must meet certain statutory standards. They, if they are accredited, they are allowed to say so. If they are not accredited, they are not allowed to use the term accreditation to refer to themselves. They are allowed to say that they are approved by the Office of Degree Authorization if they in fact have such approval, which is required to operate here at all. Oregon has historically been friendly to the startup of new post-secondary entities, and of course when you start one, by definition it is not accredited, and we have not, some states freeze them out completely. We have wanted to allow new schools to start. The most recent example that I can think of that category would be Gutenberg College in Eugene, which is a small Christian Great Books college, which started out about 10 years ago as an unaccredited school, operated under ODA's authority, and this January did achieve accreditation and seems to be doing very, very well. So that's how it's set up and works. If the school is based in another state, we do not have any jurisdiction over the making the school say what it is or not, but then the school isn't coming into Oregon. It's only the holders of its degrees that are, and that is why this law, 1039, is written the way it is.
Thank you.
One more question.
Representative Lynn.
And maybe this might be some technical matters, but the one institution has not been accredited for maybe 20, 30 years, and after that, the institution has been accredited. And the people who got the degree before that, could they need to say, since the new institution accredited, they just keep it silent?
Madam Chair, Representative Lim, there is a procedure under the Commission's rules which allows an individual in that situation to basically file a request with our office for an individual evaluation. They pay a small fee for this, which would, if they are able to demonstrate that the program they went through, the unaccredited program, is roughly equivalent to the current accredited program, they do not have to put the word unaccredited on their degree under that circumstance, because they have proven to the Office of Degree Authorization that the program they went through is roughly equivalent to the current program.
And one follow-up.
Follow-up.
I read some time ago, a long time ago, from the one church they gave just a doctor degree, doctor of philosophy, whatever, if they give $25, $50, whatever, they just give out with a small requirement, small course. Do they have to claim it also?
The most degrees that are given in that circumstance, Madam Chair, Representative Lim, are treated as honorary degrees. There is a special provision in the Commission rules also that deals with honorary degrees. A person, there is no regulation on the use of them, provided that you state that it is an honorary degree and not an earned degree. I'm not aware of any school, church-related or otherwise, in Oregon that issues doctoral degrees under those conditions that would be generally treated as an earned degree. And if they are doing so, they are not doing so legally.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Any further questions? Thank you very much.
You bet.
Andrea Henderson, please. I'm just moving.
Hello, Andrea Henderson from the Oregon Community College Association, representing the 17 community colleges in Oregon. We have a minor amendment that we would like to request on this bill. Under the bill, it's very clear that if someone holds a degree from an unaccredited institution, it will not make a difference in any of the employment standards. For example, if you have a requirement that someone must have a master's or a doctorate degree for a job, you cannot use the unaccredited degree. We would like to offer amendment, though, for those times when it's not required to have the degree. We want to clarify that our colleges do not have to recognize an employee that has an unaccredited degree. So, for example, if someone who has a master's degree that qualifies them for their job, but then also has a doctorate from an unaccredited institution, that they don't have, that the college, the employer, does not have to recognize that unaccredited degree. So we have some amendments that we'd like to give to Jim Keller to hopefully get adopted into the bill to recognize that. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Were there questions for Ms. Henderson? Thank you. We will receive your request.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will then close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1039 and see the results of further discussions and considerations. Is there any further business to come before this committee? Seeing none, stand adjourned. Thank you.